Is now being recorded.
Sue, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I never really trust the technology. I'm just going to say for the recording that the recording has started, but the presentations will not start for 5 to 10 minutes, so anybody listening should just fast forward a little bit. Okay, so Sue, now we're just kind of waiting for people to join in, okay? And your presentation looks great. Thank you very much. And just a little reminder, just to say that you have to kind of remind people to turn the pages.
Right.
Okay. I'm just going to put the phone down for a minute, okay? Hi there.
Hello.
Hey, Jackie. How are you?
Hi. Is that Sharon?
No, it's Jackie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Jackie. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Okay, we've got Sue on the phone.
And Sheila is also here.
And who's there?
Sheila in Winnipeg.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Hello.
Okay, nice to have you there. So in terms of Sue and Jackie, if you guys need a few minutes, it's good. We're just going to wait for another 5 minutes for everybody to sign on. So if you want to just go and get a glass of water or something, you're okay.
Great, thanks.
So Sheila, you're the new planning facilitator.
I am, yes.
When did you actually start your job?
Well, I guess I started for a week and a half in May, but then I've just been back since last week, really.
Wow, really? Well, welcome aboard.
Thanks. So we're moving pretty quick over here. We're trying to.
Yeah, well, I guess you're kind of feeling a sense of trying to catch up, right?
Yeah, well, a bit of that, but I think the girls here have done so much work. Their relationships are really strong. It's just trying to figure out what projects have the most potential for a year.
Oh, that's great. I know it's a very tight timeline, eh,
yeah,
to do something.
There are lots of things we can do, so it's just choosing the ones that have some value.
Which is a nice position to be in.
Yeah, it really is.
And it sounds like for them with kind of doing the planning conference early on, it sounds like that really helped to kind of get things moving at their end.
I think so. I think it generated a lot of interest. For sure the planners in the city are very interested. Here it seems always to be about the implementation and more the political support, but I think we have a lot of the people doing the work who support us, so that will be helpful.
Well, that's great. Well, welcome aboard. And I just want to check to see if anybody else is on the phone.
Hi, this is Dave Patman in Winnipeg.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm glad you could join us.
It's Pam Dimitru from Regina.
And I'm sorry, who's from Regina?
Pam Dimitru, and I've got Megan Jones coming, and I think Joy's also coming as well.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
It's Megan.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, and we've got Andrew and Jackie from the Canadian Institute of Planners in Ottawa.
Oh, that's great. I'm really glad you guys could make it.
See you.
So we're just kind of waiting for everybody to sign on. In the meantime, is everybody okay with their the presentations? They were able to access them okay?
Yep.
We'll take a look.
Is anybody else new on?
Hi, Kevin Gould from New Brunswick just joined in.
Excellent. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
This is Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Paul Hasselbeck from Vancouver Island Health Authority.
And I'm sorry, who is it?
Paul Hasselbeck from Vancouver Island Health Authority.
Hi, great. I'm glad you could make it. So we're just at the waiting place, so if people need to get a glass of water or something, we're just waiting for a few minutes while everybody signs on.
I think I will do that, Kim.
Okay. And just if you sign in, just let me know who's there. That's helpful.
Hi, Kim. Natalie Kiszczak.
Hi. You sound like you're in the next room. Hi.
Not really.
Anybody else signed on that hasn't kind of spoken up yet?
Hi, Kim. It's Sharon and Kelly here from Hamilton.
Well, that's great to have you guys here.
Sorry about that. We were having a little technical difficulties at this end.
Sometimes it takes a minute to get through. I don't know if that was the problem.
It's all good.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're there. And we're just kind of waiting a few more minutes for people to sign in, and then we'll get started. Anybody else signed in the last minute who hasn't spoken up yet?
Hi, it's Richard here.
Richard from?
Oh, from Halifax.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
George McKibben, Hamilton.
Hi, George. Kim? Anybody else?
Hi, Kim. It's Sarah from Newfoundland.
Hi, Sarah. Glad you could join us. So we're just waiting another minute. Has everybody got the presentations? Everybody's able to access them okay?
Yep.
Pellet will say this is, can anybody not access them? Anybody need me to send them to the links to them? Okay. We're just going to wait another minute. Anybody else joined on that hasn't spoken up yet?
John Carsley, Vancouver.
Oh, hi, John. Nice that you could join us. Anybody else who hasn't introduced themselves yet?
Inga from Ottawa Public Health.
Hi. Is that Inga?
Yep.
Okay. Hi. Anybody else from Ottawa coming?
Two of my colleagues, I think, or actually, sorry, one of them will be joining through their own phone. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else who hasn't spoken up yet?
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is Olympia Pantaleimon, the Healthy Communities Committee.
Hi, how are you?
That's nice. Great.
For the CIP and CITE people today, that's really nice.
Good, good to hear.
We're just going to wait another minute just to make certain that everybody's, you know, that everybody that we're kind of expecting is on. And then while we're waiting for people, I'll just say to everybody, just a reminder, please do not put your phones on hold. We will ask everybody to hit *4 when we're ready to get the presentations going. So *4 mutes and unmutes your phone. And a reminder for everybody, we are recording these sessions, and so then we put the recording on the website afterwards for anybody who's missed them. So if you feel shy about being recorded, then you can send me an email with a question, and I'll say it for you. And let's see if there's anything else. The format for today's presentations, we've got three health authorities from Ontario speaking today. And the reason we've got them all from Ontario is that Ontario's had a few advantages in terms of we have public health standards that actually indicate that that public health should be working on healthy public policy related to the built environment, which has kind of been a very strong advantage for us here in Ontario. And we have three health authorities have been doing a lot of work on the built environment through land use and planning processes for years. The first presentation will be Hamilton, and the second one will be from HKPR, Hamilton Kawartha Lakes Pine Ridge. I think, did I get that right, Sue?
Halliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge.
Thank you, sorry. And then we've got Niagara Region, somebody from the Public Health Department, Niagara Region. And the three of them will go, the three health authorities will speak one after the other, and then we'll open it for questions for all three, if that's okay with everybody. And I think I'll do the introductions in between sessions just so that gives people some time to kind of make certain that you've got the proper presentation in front of you. And also, I can't remember. Oh, just so you know who's speaking. Okay, so has anybody else signed in that has not introduced themselves?
There'll be one of our medical students. This is John Carsley calling Paul Bogovitz, who'll be signing in shortly.
Okay, so
hi, Zuna Tyson from Fraser Health. I just signed in.
Okay, that's great. Okay.
Hi, I'm Kate Milligan, Toronto Public Health.
Hi, Kate. So were people having trouble signing in? Like, should they wait for another minute, or do you think that's it?
Okay. I think I'm going to start with the introductions. So this is for the Hamilton presentation. There's actually two staff people from Hamilton. One is Kelly Scott. She's a physical activity specialist in the chronic disease prevention team, working in the area of active-friendly communities. She works to increase physical activity at the population level. Her specific area is active and sustainable transportation that focuses on policies that address the built environment within the city of Hamilton. We also have Sharon McKinnon, who is a public health nurse with Hamilton Public Health Services on the chronic disease prevention team. Sharon has been working on policy and environmental change to increase physical activity levels through active and sustainable transportation. She's been working in public health for 24 years and enjoys commuting to work on her bike. So I'll let the two of you take it away. So if everybody could hit *4 now to mute your phones, that would be terrific.
Hi, I just want to say thanks very much, Kim, for the opportunity to share some information that we've been working on here in Hamilton. Just to orient you to Hamilton, as you know, it's located at the head of Lake Ontario between Toronto and Niagara Falls. We are known as the City of Waterfalls. We've got a population of over 500,000. We've got 126 waterfalls, and approximately 80% of Hamilton is rural.
Do you want to switch slides?
This next picture just gives a little bit of context map for the different areas in Hamilton. In the red, you'll notice that's our downtown area. The dark yellow goldish area outlines our urban core. The sort of lighter gold is our urban sort of general area. And then our yellow bits on the map relate to the suburban areas. You'll notice the light green area on the map is rural, which is quite significant. And then you'll notice some little tiny dots, the purple ones, sort of outline where our village hamlets are. And the turquoise dots are our urban villages. Along the waterfront area is the light purple area that identifies the industrial area of the city. Next slide. The city of Hamilton is comprised of seven different city departments. Public Health Services is one of those city departments. Public Health Services reports to the Board of Health, and here in Hamilton, our Board of Health is actually our members of City Council. Within Public Health Services, we have five different divisions. Kelly and I are with the Healthy Living Division, and that is where the most of the area in the built environment is worked on. Our other divisions are Family Health, Clinical and Preventative Services, Health Protection, Planning and Business Improvement. In terms of FTE that's allocated to work in the built environment, it's approximately 3.5 FTE. And we've got four different disciplines that work on the built environment: public health nurse, physical activity specialist, health promotion specialist, and a combination of registered dietitian and nutritionist. Now, these FTE are not new allocation. These are FTE that have been reallocated based on a situational assessment that we did within our division in 2011. Next slide.
So this slide is representing what came out of our situational assessment, and so within the chronic disease prevention team, there's actually three component groups working on a healthy communities framework. And for the physical activity people specifically, it's an activity-friendly community. And as a result of our situational assessment and literature review and speaking with our internal and external partners, the domains that we're focusing on are land use, active and sustainable transportation, parks, trails, and open space, and then the two settings that we work in are workplace and the school setting. Next slide, please. So this slide here is just showing our internal partners that we work with most closely. So really, our city manager's office, planning and ACDEV, community services, and specifically our recreation department. And they're actually a fairly new group that we've started to work with on a number of different projects. Public Works, who we've had a very long-standing relationship with and work quite closely with almost on a daily or at least a few times a week basis. And within the city of the city's manager's office, specifically it's the neighborhood development strategy. And so this is where we've been able to do quite a bit of community outreach working through this office. Next slide, please.
We're really fortunate, as Kim had mentioned, here in Ontario, we have the Ontario Public Health Standards, which really give us permission to be doing the type of work that we're doing with respect to the built environment, with the goal being to reduce the burden of preventable chronic diseases of public health importance. So within that, we're looking at assessment and surveillance and health promotion and policy development. So Kelly has mentioned working with internal partners. We also have a number of external partners that we're working with. Within the Ontario Public Health Standards, under number 6, it talks about policy and supportive environments in addition to public awareness. So again, this is where we can, gives us permission to be doing work in the built environment. The provincial policy statement is another piece of legislation at the provincial level that provides direction for the entire province with respect to land use planning and development. This is currently under review, and we've been very fortunate to be able to get a lot of language and information in there around the built environment. So when that new provincial policy comes out, I think we're going to be very pleased with the new language that's contained in there. In addition, the big move, which is Metrolinx's document, has got some specific targets in there, specifically looking at having 60% of children using active transportation to school by the year 2031. Next slide. When we look at our internal documents within the city, we're very fortunate to have some great supportive policy around the built environment. In public health, we've had the opportunity to have input into various plans, so this also helps to guide our work. And these are just some of the examples of the policy on this slide that really talks about the built environment. Next slide.
So this next slide speaks to some of the strategies that we've been working across our domains. And so I'll just give you a couple of examples under each of the different strategies. So under the advocacy piece, we've recently been working on a complete streets policies. So this is actually with some external partners, our social planning and research folks, along with some of the internal departments. Looking at connectivity for on and off-road paths, and there's actually a couple of new projects coming up around the trails piece that our folks in Parks, Trails, and Open Space are working on. As Sharon has mentioned, we've done quite a bit around input on different plans within the city, advocating for active transportation, and recently some work around transit, a little bit newer piece. And advocating for school travel planning and active and safe routes to school policies. Under the parks and open street, parks and open space piece, one of the big pieces that we're looking at is park acquisition. As different areas within the city, some are maybe a little bit more deficient than others with regards to green space. And I know one of the things that they're looking at as well is, as schools are closing down, how they might be able to use that land to change it into parks. Within building community capacity, we work with a number of different external groups, and a few of them have just started up. So we have a new one called People for Active Transportation Hamilton, and it really just started, I back in February, and is a coalition of a number of different external organizations that are all interested in active transportation. So we're really looking at some kind of coordinated, overarching Hamilton approach. The other new group that we've started working with is the Hamilton Sustainable Professionals Network Group. Try saying that three times in a row. And so this, again, is bringing together professionals and organizations that are looking at the sustainability piece. So currently, we've had one meeting and another one to follow in August that will look at a terms of reference and building that committee in the direction that we want to take. The next piece around the awareness and education is really doing some key presentations to some of our bigger organizations to really build some support around active transportation or other policies and supportive environment work that we're doing. So recently, Sharon and myself have been doing presentations to some of the parent groups that are linked to our two school boards, as well as a number of our neighborhood associations. So really leading into that piece so that they can do some community advocacy on their own behalf of, you know, issues that are relevant to them and policies and environmental change that they would like to see. And of course, the last piece, any of the work that we're doing, we try to add some form of evaluation into it. So next slide, please. And this slide here is speaking to some of the different partnerships and achievements that we have sustained through our work in the built environment. So one of them being partnerships, and a strong one would be our Transportation Demand Management Implementation Committee. So really working across, again, a number of departments within the city based on those internal partners that were mentioned earlier in the presentation, and looking at the sustainability piece and how we're using our land and transportation. And, of course, another piece is around the active and safe routes to school and school travel planning. And we'll speak a little bit more to that on a future slide around our Stepping It Up project and school siting and site design. Another piece that Sharon had already mentioned was the feedback on plans. Again, the advocacy projects that we've been working on. So just a few more to mention. Back in 2009, Sharon, correct me if I'm wrong, the Canadian Walking Masterclass and the signing of the International Charter for Walking. I guess 2 years ago now was the pedestrian mobility plan, and I think it's just coming up to council in August or in the fall. The Complete Street Police, our Walk Friendly Ontario pilot that was completed last fall, and now we're hoping to go for the designation at the end of the summer. A number of photo voice projects that we've done, starting with our Stepping It Up project, and now it has spilled over into our neighborhood development strategy, and Sharon's been doing some ongoing work with a number of different neighborhoods. Doing some data collection and evaluation. Some of our most recent work is around our North End traffic management plan and doing a modified HIA, which Sharon will speak to a little bit later. Doing some data collection around the Walk Friendly Ontario. Quite a bit of data collection from our Stepping It Up project, which entailed quite a few walkability audits and the photo voice piece. And again, looking at that park acquisition. Next slide, please. So getting into some of the specific projects, Active and Safe Routes to School has been around since 2000 in Hamilton. But in 2009, we had the opportunity to work on the Stepping It Up project coordinated by Metrolinx. And after this project had happened, it really was the catalyst for working towards more policy and environmental pieces. And at the end of March 2012, we actually had quite a big workshop that kind of gave us a direction for our Active and Safe Route Steering Committee and developed a whole framework. And so one of the pieces that we are working with our Active and Safe Route Steering Committee is around school siting and site design, and have been able to establish some new partnerships at the school board with the planning and operations folks. So a little bit different focus than our usual with the superintendent. And then, of course, the other piece is there's been a number of parent groups and neighborhood associations that are really showing an interest around how kids are getting to and from school. So really just helping to build that community capacity for the community to actually take on some of that advocacy work.
One of the other achievements that Kelly and I have been working on is the North End Traffic Management Plan Modified 8 Health Impact Assessment. We saw this as an opportunity to look at a health and all policies approach and apply a modified HIA that was identified as part of our situational assessment a couple of years ago. We're working quite closely with Public Works on this. And it's been an excellent opportunity for community engagement as well as an opportunity to work across different sectors here within Hamilton. And I'll just mention that the North End, we call it the North End TMP, they're actually implementing a 30-kilometer per hour speed limit, which will be implemented starting in August. So it's a terrific opportunity to sort of look at data collection before and after. So we're in process of that and very excited about it. Next slide, please. Working in the area of built environment issues has not been without challenges and barriers that you may see working in other areas. Some of those challenges have been competing priorities, such as political will, budget, other projects and time. One of the other challenges has been working with interdisciplinary teams. We're working with other disciplines across different departments, so you're talking about planners, engineers, various public health professionals, among others. And so it's been a challenge, but at the same time an opportunity to bring different things to the table. Some of the other challenges have been sort of internal challenges in terms of making sure that our colleagues here in public health have the appropriate information to understand the link between health and the built environment. Additionally, another challenge would be knowledge transfer. And this isn't only internal within public health, but also internally within the corporation. And again, it's getting people all on the same page with the same vision for the built environment. And the last challenge that I'll mention is communication. We've got Hamilton's a pretty large city and lots of bureaucracy, and acknowledging the fact that things take time in terms of with our structure that we currently have. Next slide.
And so this slide is our specific recommendations, and really they're kind of a leap off from some of the barriers that we've faced. So looking at using a coordinated approach to address barriers by exploring policies that help support healthy communities through changes to the built environment. By looking at building community capacity to advance healthy communities, especially within the community, so that they can do some of that advocacy work on their own. Looking at developing benchmarks and measurable targets. Oftentimes we're asked whether the work that we're doing, is it actually making a change? So really, you know, tracking that information and being able to report back to our management or to council or even to the community to let them know what's happening. Really look at raising awareness of the importance of the built environment and health. And finally, building relationships and partnerships towards that shared vision for action.
Thank you.
Thanks. That brings us right to the end.
Thank you very much, Sharon and Kelly. That's a great job. And we'll let people ask you questions after the other two speakers, if that's okay. So people can turn now to the HKPR presentation. And Sue Shikazi will be doing that presentation. Sue lives in Haliburton County, and she's been working as a health promoter with the Haliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit since 2005. A significant part of her work is working with community partners to advocate and plan for communities that are more walking and cycling friendly. Sue is an avid cyclist, runner, and skier, and uses all three of these activities for transportation, fitness, and recreation. So, Sue, we'll let you take it away.
Thanks very much, Kim. So, I'll talk about how we've been planning for active transportation in Haliburton County. So, my slides are numbered in the bottom right-hand corner, so I'll try to refer to the page number so you know when to where I am. So page 2 is a presentation overview. I'll just give you a little bit of background on Haliburton and on HKPR. I'll talk about some of the strategies that we have used in our active transportation and built environment work, some results, and then some lessons learned. So on page 3, you'll see a map of the County of Haliburton and HKPR. So Haliburton County is a rural area located about 2 hours north of Toronto. It's quite big, so it's about 4,500 square kilometers. And just to give you a sense of that, it takes over an hour to drive east to west and also north-south. Our year-round population is about 16,500, but that about triples in the summer because of our seasonal population. So we have a large number of people who have cottages up here because we have lots of beautiful lakes, and so it gets quite busy here in the summertime. We have two main villages, Haliburton and Minden, which are the location of most of our economic and social activity, and then there are also a number of smaller hamlets across the county. Our government is two-tiered, so we have four municipalities, each with their own council and staff, and one county government, so representatives from municipal council form county council. Our main economic activity is tourism. And another sort of characteristic of our county is that we have an aging demographic. We have a higher rate of seniors than the rest of Ontario, and that's, I think, largely because lots of people retire to their cottages. So the Haliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit, which I work for, covers a large geographic area. So we have three counties, Haliburton, the City of Kawartha Lakes, and Northumberland County, which you see indicated on the map there. We have four offices, and I work out of the Haliburton office. And basically, we have one FTE per county who does work on the built environment, and a significant focus of that is active transportation. And it falls under the OPHS requirement of chronic disease and injury prevention. And we've been doing this work since around 2004, 2005, and especially around influencing policy and building relationships with municipalities, and also working extensively with community partners to move the agenda forward locally. So on to page 4. I'm going to talk about how my job in public health works in partnership with a committee called the CIA, the Communities in Action Committee, which is a coalition of community people who came together in 2004 to provide community-based leadership on active transportation. So I chair and I work with this committee wearing my public health hat, and so it works out to be a win-win for me because it helps me to achieve public health goals, and it certainly enables me to get more accomplished than I could on my own, and it also resources the committee because I can do work on the committee's behalf on staff time. So we develop partnerships, we promote the benefits of active transportation, we advocate, we do all kinds of different advocacy things to encourage more AT, and we do research as well. Currently, we have representatives from public health, from community economic development, from trails groups, from healthy communities, and also from business, the business community. And over the years, the CIA has applied for various grants to fund the work that we have done, and has been a key player in bringing active transportation to the attention of municipalities. Those of you from rural areas probably know that most municipalities don't have the luxury of having dedicated staff for walking, cycling, or active transportation. So having a community group that has the ability to advocate, to raise awareness, to do education, has been really critical in raising awareness for the public and with municipalities. So some of our strategies on page 5, of course an important one is engaging municipalities. So we've needed to raise awareness with our elected officials and staff about the role that they play around AT. So the way that we do that, ways we've done that over the years, we make regular delegations to council to give them updates, to ask for input, to raise awareness of their role, and we hardly ever ask for money because that always makes them a little bit edgy. We try to communicate what's in it for them. And one of the things that's really important here locally is economic development and attracting and retaining new people and businesses. So we try to make the case that by making our communities active transportation friendly, we're improving quality of life. We have hosted a number of workshops over the years and invited councillors and staff to engage them and also to raise awareness. So, for example, we participated in the Walk 21 Roadshow a few years ago. We brought in the mayor of Ajax to speak to our roads committee to talk about bicycle-friendly communities. We had Gil Penalosa here to do a workshop. So those are some examples. And we make policy recommendations by participating in official plan reviews and try to influence infrastructure decisions, for example, around paved shoulders. On page 6, another one of our strategies is research and planning. So trying to build a strong evidence-based case and developing some tools and resources that will help to do that. Because when we started this work in 2005, there really wasn't a lot being done on active transportation in rural communities. So we felt like we could start to create some evidence around that. So we sought funding and got funding to develop active transportation plans for both the villages of Haliburton and Minden. A big part of that was going to the community for input. So we did community-based research that included things like focus groups and surveys, which also helped to raise awareness of active transportation at a community level. Because again, back then, you didn't hear a lot of people talking about that. Our active transportation plans also include illustrations or photoshopping of problem areas to help create a vision of what could work better, which we have found helpful. And I think an important thing to point out was that both of these AT plans were developed by the CIA rather than commissioned by a municipality, which is more typical. So it's a really great example of how in a rural community where the time and resources of municipalities are fairly limited, a community group and public health can really enhance the capacity to do new things. I should also add that our health unit is separate from the municipal government. So unlike Hamilton, which is part of the city structure, we're separate from, we report to a board of health that's independent from our municipalities. So our strategies, another strategy is raising community awareness. We certainly do focus on influencing decision makers and policy, which is kind of a top-down approach, but we feel that equally important are bottom-up strategies, so community engagement and building a base of community support and raising awareness and interest, and also ultimately trying to encourage more people to use active transportation, because as a friend of mine is fond of saying, politicians don't create bandwagons, they get on them. So what we try to do is rally the community and create a bandwagon. So some ways that we've done that, I mentioned community-based research. We also chose to focus our planning and messaging on our village hubs rather than on the whole county because it was really too big an area. It was more realistic for us to, say, look at the village of Haliburton and how can we promote active transportation in and around that village. And from that came an awareness-raising campaign that promoted park the car and get moving. Which we felt was a doable message for a rural area, acknowledging that people need to drive to town because of the distance, but encouraging them to park and walk once they got there because, we kind of often get in the habit of driving from place to place, even though the town itself is like a block long. We have, over the years, done a number of events and activities to promote active transportation. For example, the Commuter Challenge, Bike and Walk to School, Cycling Festival, and the World Record Walk. We have worked with the local media doing news articles and radio PSAs, engaging in advocacy. So, for example, in local elections, letting candidates know that cycling and active transportation and healthy communities are important. And we're also just opportunistic, so we try to keep our ear to the ground for things that are going on that link to our message and piggyback on those. On page 8, community education is another part of our awareness strategies. We have created walk, bike, and be active maps for 3 communities, which show people where they can go, how do they get to destinations. And also there's a walking a scale that shows the approximate time it takes to get from place to place, because typically people overestimate how long it will take to walk somewhere and they underestimate how long it will take to drive somewhere. So what we try to do with these maps is show that, you know, this to get from here to here will take you about 15 minutes. Along with that are some signs that have been put up in 3 communities, Minden, Dorset, and Haliburton. We've been doing Share the Road promotion since 2009, and initially that was a campaign that was done in partnership with the county municipalities, the health unit, the CIA, the OPP, and it's something that's now promoted annually. And finally on page 9, evaluation, as Sharon mentioned, is an important strategy to be using on an ongoing basis. And so one of the things that we did starting in 2011 was to begin to undertake an evaluation to measure changes in active transportation since 2005 and to assess our contribution to these changes to see what kind of impact our work has had. And our evaluation consisted of these 4 pieces listed here: an inventory, a survey, an observational study that included manual counts of people, and some key informant interviews. So on page 10, the results of our evaluation gave us some good indicators about the impact of our efforts. So first of all, around policy change, all of our official plans now include language to support healthy active communities in general and active transportation specifically. So this is one example from the Township of Algonquin Highlands, OP. So I'll let you just have a quick read of that. On page 11, there are a couple more policy examples, one from the county official plan and one from the municipality of Dysart. And in some cases, so what we did was we submitted policy recommendations as part of the review process. And in some cases, our recommendations were included word for word. And in other cases, the spirit of our recommendations were captured in new policies. So now they all include reference to active transportation, which previously none of them did. And in fact, most of them did not include references to cycling, and now they all do, and much more explicit reference to walking and pedestrians as well. So we feel that our participation in that process was quite successful. Page 12, some infrastructure improvements. So, you know, policy is one thing, but what you want to see is on the ground changes, and our county and municipalities have made some pretty significant investments over the years in infrastructure. So in Minden, some examples are the completion of the Riverwalk Trail, which goes along the Gull River right through the village, which includes a new pedestrian bridge, and you see a picture of that in the lower right. Addition of amenities like sculptures, shelters and benches, and pedestrian scale lighting along the Riverwalk, and also a downtown streetscape plan, which they did last year, widening the sidewalks, adding some colored concrete, and just making it a little bit more pedestrian-friendly and more aesthetically pleasing. On the next page, you'll see some infrastructure improvements in the village of Haliburton, where they've done 2 major projects, one on York Street, which is kind of a back street of town, and one on Highland, which is the main street. And you'll see a before picture of Highland Street on the left and an after picture on the right. And you can see there's much nicer sidewalk, some brickwork, nice benches, and plantings. And they also buried the hydro lines. So some new amenities to upgrade the street as well and make it more aesthetically pleasing and more inviting for pedestrians. On page 14, infrastructure improvements on, from the county end. The county has begun adding 1.2-meter paved shoulders to their major road projects since 2008, which totals, I think, about 30 to 32 kilometers, which is small given that we have hundreds of kilometers of municipal and county road, but it's a start. And it does make a difference in the places that they've done it. And they also, as part of the Share the Road campaign, installed Share the Road signs across the county. On page 15, some quotes around increased awareness. So the surveys gave us some qualitative information showing that there does seem to be some more awareness of physical activity, of using the trails to get around, and also of things like sharing the road with cyclists. So those are just a couple of sample quotes. Page 16 shows some self-reported frequency of active transportation use. Again, from the survey, we were able to compare results from the 2011 survey to a similar survey done in 07, which shows that there's been an increase in reported use of active transportation. And these are results for the village of Minden. So that's encouraging as well. And we did include in the survey if people parked their car in one spot and then walked to do errands, that was they could count that as an active transportation trip. Page 17, another significant result for us came from the key informant interviews, and that was that the CIA emerged as a credible resource for municipalities. And this was really important to us because relationship and partnership building has been such a focus of our work, and it does take time to build those kinds of relationships and that credibility. And so those are a few quotes from our key informants that indicated to us that they see the CIA as a good partner and resource. And because I do this work wearing my public health hat, that credibility also transfers to the public health unit. So people know that, you know, if there's something that comes up around walking or cycling or active transportation, that they can call the health unit and speak to someone here about that. So having someone on the front line to put a face on the work being done and being out in the community is important. On page 18, another theme that came out from our key informants was the evidence of a cultural shift in their decision making. So when we started this work, our local politicians, I don't think, really understood what active transportation was all about, especially in the context of rural communities. But we have learned that that view is changing, and certainly when they see the term active transportation, it has some meaning to them and some kind of connection to other priorities that they may have at a council level. Page 19, what we learned from the evaluation, first of all, that community groups like the CIA and also like public health have skills and expertise that can help municipalities to try some new and innovative ways to create a healthy community, because neither group, especially in a rural community, can do this alone, and relationship building is a really important foundation. Secondly, ultimately, we want more people to use active transportation, but as we know, in public health, changing behavior is complicated, so a variety of strategies are needed. And it's also important to involve many stakeholders, for example, public health, business, education, and local government. The third point is that evaluation does help you to know what kind of impact you're having, and it also helps to make the case for continued investment. And our evaluation, rather than drawing cause and effect relationships, was more about what changes had been observed and who contributed and what they contributed. So we're looking for contribution as opposed to attribution in our evaluation. And it showed that through our work there that we had made some contribution to the observed changes. And for us, it was also helpful to have a broader vision that had active transportation as part of creating a healthy, active community, because it helps us to connect with other things that are happening, and to link to some of those things. And this quote that came from one of our key informants, persistence and consistency, slow, consistent pressure applied over a long period of time, really sums up, I think, what our approach has been in the time that we've been doing this work. So finally, page 20, what we've learned since we started, as I've mentioned, relationship and partnership building is key. Public health is not only a partner, but a leader, I think, in this work. We provide expertise in health promotion, in communication, in epidemiology. We provide admin support. And at the same time, working with community partners does increase our capacity significantly. So as I said earlier, it is a win-win situation. We've been able to seek funding from a whole variety of sources, so that's helpful. And we also always build project coordination into our grants, so that means that we can hire someone to, again, have some dedicated time to move projects forward. And evidence-informed action, I think, is important, that especially for us, because there wasn't a lot of evidence when we started. We just had to start somewhere and try some things. And in the process, we can be part of creating a body of evidence around active transportation in rural communities. Demonstrating multiple benefits that speak to municipal priorities, and for us, tourism, addressing the aging population, and economic development would be three. That it's been helpful to provide a visual because, the artist's renditions or the photoshopping show what something could look like. And sometimes that's a nice thing to have. Needing to work at both the top level and the bottom up, so that's the policy and the community level work. Because the bottom line, I think, is that politicians need to sense a demand in order to act. So part of our work is increasing the demand for walking and cycling facilities and infrastructure. That a manageable rural message was important, so the park the car and get moving message we felt was something that was doable for people, and also that rural geography means that a focus on smaller areas is easier when getting started, so focusing in on a specific village versus the whole county. An integrated planning approach, which means that we look for what else can active transportation connect with. There's accessibility planning, there's healthy communities planning, there's safety initiatives, there's environmental initiatives. So looking at who else is doing related work and how might we dovetail with that. And finally, looking for opportunities to share knowledge and experience like this webinar, because what we found is it helps to build credibility at home if you're being recognized for work being done outside by outside groups. So I can, go to our council and say, well, we had this national audience and I was talking about all the great things that are happening here, and so keep up the good work, which is a nice way to pat them on the back and also let them know that other people and other communities are looking at us and learning from what we're doing so that we can keep on moving forward. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Sue. That's great. And once again, I'll just ask people to hold questions. And we've got a third presentation, and it's by Jackie Gervais in Niagara Region. And Jackie is a health promoter for Niagara Region Public Health in chronic disease and injury prevention. Her work entails supporting policy change at various levels of government and the community as it pertains to active transportation and the built environment through citizen and stakeholder engagement and partnership. And at the regional level, Jackie is a staff support for the Regional Niagara Bicycling Committee and to the Healthy Living Niagara Partnership. Both groups support and mobilize policy change and promote cycling and active transportation in Niagara Region. So, Jackie, I'll let you take it from there.
Hello, everyone. As she mentioned, my role here in our Public Health Department is really to be a change for policy. If you go to slide 2, it'll give you an idea of how our governance works. It's a little bit different than the last two presentations. I work for the regional government within the Public Health Department, and we have 12 lower-tier municipalities, both rural and urban mix. So we have a good variety of community partners to work with. In addition to that, we have 427,000 people in 12 municipalities with 26 distinct communities. And we get about 12 million visitors to the Niagara region each year. So it's a very interesting and dynamic community to work within. Our regional council is our board of health, and because I work in a two-tier government, my role is to provide policy support and guidance to my council as my board of health, and it is not my role to do advocacy work. And so, therefore, for Niagara Region, it's been very critical in to make partnerships to build the case for active transportation. Next slide. In our role to create policy change and support, we have been working through some amazing citizens groups, municipal staff and councillors, both regional and municipal, and a variety of community partners. The end results of policy and the official plans itself is not difficult, and we do have official plan changes that support active transportation. Where the challenge really comes from is in the implementation portion. So this is where my role comes in as a public health professional, as well as working with my community partners through Healthy Living Niagara and the Regional Niagara Bicycling Committee and our citizens groups. My job is to really provide support around building the economic case, building public awareness, reaching out to vulnerable populations, such as through school travel planning and age-friendly communities. This presentation in particular will focus on the relationship with citizen advocates, municipal staff, and elected officials. So really, we're going to look at how I get our foot in the door, some of the workshops and follow-up sessions, as well as supports for professional development, resources, and knowledge exchange. And on the slide here, you can see our How Walkable Is Your Community brochure that we use quite a bit, as well as some of our economic value tools that we developed around active transportation to really build that business case. So why engage or work with our already engaged citizens? One, as a public health employee, we work within a system. And many of our citizens are not necessarily defined by those systems, but what they need to do is be able to understand how those systems work. So my role is to really help them to negotiate through the various levels of governance that we have and to get them to work with the right people. And the advantage of having the citizens is they bring different perspectives to the issues and many potential solutions. They really see the issues from a grassroots level, and they bring more voices around the issue. And you can see from the other two presentations that that's very critical in moving active transportation agendas forward. It also helps citizens to realize the challenges faced by local government and recognize financial implications of their decisions. So it's a very balanced approach and can help with local priority setting. And so this picture here is actually of one of our forums that we held, and it brought together planners, recreation staff, local citizens. It was quite engaging, and it really helped this particular forum. We actually used some of the results from that to drive our next actions forward. Next slide. Our ultimate hope is to have citizens groups established in all 12 of our municipalities, plus a support system at the regional level. Citizens groups start in lots of different ways. Some start and stall and then restart at a different time. At the moment, we have groups in 7 of our municipalities. Some of our smallest municipalities, like Waynefleet, have a unique group there, as well as Pelham and Thorold. We have 2 groups in Grimsby. We have 1 out in Fort Erie, St. Catharines, and Welland. So we're gradually working our way through. And what we've discovered is that each group can look quite different. 4 of the committees are committees of council, these active transportation groups. 3 of them are citizens groups, Garden City Alliance for Sustainable Transportation, Bike Welland, and Grimsby Green. And then 1 of our groups is actually through a private school, a Christian school in West Lincoln. So it's been really interesting to see how these different citizens groups have evolved. And the key is to really seek out support from at least one municipal staff per municipality, a counselor, and then have some real citizen advocates. Look for those champions and really develop their skills, and that's part of my role. And then link these folks together so that they can support one another. In this picture, we have featured the city of Welland, and you'll see Mayor Barry Sharp there holding the Bike-Friendly Communities Award. Welland was the first community in the Niagara region to receive the Bike-Friendly designation through the Share the Road coalition, and this has really gotten the enthusiasm going in Welland to move active transportation forward. Not only that, it set kind of a chain reaction to our other municipalities, and we got a little more competitive. And this year, we had three more municipalities receive their bike-friendly community designation. So looking a little bit more at Welland, in 2009, we had a Walk and Bike for Life meeting held, and Gil Pentelosa attended. And it was a one-hour presentation and then a two-hour workshop. And through this workshop, there were some recommendations that were provided. At the time, the mayor felt that they were doing really well and chose not to move forward with the focus on active transportation. However, some of the active transportation objectives were being met through their participation in the Age-Friendly Pilot Initiative. So their focus at that time was really on the age-friendly piece. In the meantime, there was another election, and a new mayor was brought in, and that was Mayor Barry Sharp. And he became an advocate once he started to participate on the Regional Niagara Bicycling Committee. He was the co-chair of that committee. And through his interest with RMBC, he invited Eleanor McMahon to speak to the Welland City Council about the Bike Friendly Communities Award. In the meantime, there was also a new group evolving called Bike Welland. They're a citizens group. The application for the Bike Friendly Award was really kind of an opportunity to highlight some important features in the community and make it bike friendly and also active transportation friendly. Along with this, the mayor and the staff became very supportive of active transportation. So in April of 2012, with the support of Paul Young, and you can see him standing there in the middle, we had a second active transportation workshop, and although there was a lot of interest in developing an active transportation committee of council, at this time they don't have the financial means to support an advisory committee. However, there's definitely support and interest to continue moving the AT agenda forward and possibly apply for the Silver Bike Friendly Community Award. And two of the other members that you see in the picture standing beside Paul are members from the Bike Welland Club, and they're actually working right now at developing a bike map for Welland, these particular citizens. So they're really moving the agenda forward. Next slide, please. The Garden City Alliance for Sustainable Transportation is also a citizens group. It was formed in the city of St. Catharines around some key issues in the downtown core for work that was being done. They were looking at making some changes to the downtown core, and they wanted to have it more bike-friendly. And they were able to draw city councilors out on their bikes to experience the dangers of riding their bike in that particular section of road. Over the last 2 years or so, the participation of this group has started to wane, but they still have some very strong advocates interested in improving the city. Recently, they attended the bike-friendly business workshop that we held. So in partnership with Healthy Living Niagara, we were able to run a bike-friendly business workshop. And their city councilor, Mark Elliott, attended, and this really sparked some interest from him. So he has put forward a request to create an active transportation committee of council for the city of St. Catharines. And it's really starting to evolve as they're moving forward. So you never know how it goes. It may start off one way and eventually it could evolve into something else. And my role is to continue to support them. In Pelham, next slide please, we have the Pelham Active Transportation Committee, and they are a very strong and active committee of council. And for the past 3 years, they have hosted an open streets event in the summer, and through their recommendations, now have dedicated funds allocated to the installation of benches each year. They also applied for the Bike Friendly Community Award with the support of the Olympic cyclist Steve Bauer. And Pelham received a silver designation. They are the first rural community to ever receive silver through the Share the Road Coalition. It took 2 years to move from a workshop that we held in 2007 with them to have a deputation to council that would eventually lead to today's very powerful committee. And these are some of the citizens of that committee that are out there really advocating for walking and cycling in the town of Pelham. Consistent efforts are made with this committee to engage new members and engage other champions via subgroups. So they've developed this one committee of council and now has subcommittees working on their bike ward application, for example, as well as other active transportation initiatives. So they've really branched out and come at active transportation in different ways. Next slide, please. In Fort Erie, Fort Erie has an active transportation committee of council, but theirs is kind of neat because their active transportation committee of council has a health promoter from their community health center sitting on their committee. And their focus in Fort Erie was really on school travel planning. And so they focused on one particular elementary school, General Vanier, and they were able to make some significant changes to the community design to support children to walk to school. So in support with working with their city engineers and their planners, they were able to make some changes to things like stoplight, signal light timing, so the signal light timing was longer for children to be able to cross the street. They put bollards up around their trails leading into the school. They did some anti-idling. They changed the driveway of the school so that parents had a kiss and ride section if they needed to drop their children off, but it was also moved down the street so children had to walk further. And just recently, the school board has amalgamated three schools in Fort Erie, and they actually left General Vanier open, and part of that was because General Vanier had school travel planning. And so at the beginning of this school year, what the principal did was show children from the other schools how they could walk to General Vanier. So it's been very exciting to see how that goes. They did some footprints on sidewalks so that people could walk there. Easy paths. Next slide, please. In Waynflete, this is kind of it's one of my favorites. I can't say each one isn't really interesting, but this one kind of came up in a rather unique way. Smithville Christian High School is really the catalyst for change in the little town of Smithville within West Lincoln. And a few years ago, I was asked to come and do a presentation to community members about what active transportation is. And the municipal staff person had lined up about 10 or 12 people that were going to come to my presentation. On the day of the presentation, we had one teacher and two students that attended. And at first, the municipal staff member was a little bit disappointed because she had hoped for greater attendance, but the truth was, those were the right people to have at the table. So shortly after I did my presentation to this teacher and her two students, they went into their civics class, and they decided to do a petition and presentation about safe pedestrian walkways to their leisureplex. This high school doesn't have a gym, and they require the use of the leisureplex, but because it's a rural community, the students were walking down a rural road that was 80 kilometers an hour posted and no sidewalks. And so what they wanted to do is have sidewalks installed and make it safer for those students to be able to get to the leisureplex for their phys ed program. This was a very successful deputation. They were able to get what they were looking for, and then the township partnered with them again through the Healthy Communities grant application and was awarded a $42,000 grant. And this money was used to hire a consultant to draft a trails and corridors master plan for Smithville, identifying safe ways to travel and to walk to school. Since then, the municipality and school have teamed up to actually develop a trail along the 20 Mile Creek, and the students worked with a planning software program along with the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority, and those plans are actually going to be implemented pending some of the funding that they receive. So it's been really neat to see the engagement of students to really make change. So one of the roles that I do in supporting the development and the continuous work of these local citizens is we host the walkability workshop. And primarily, the focus or the objective is to facilitate change at a local level. It's a three-hour session which provides an opportunity for community members to discuss ways to improve the walkability of their communities and to identify priority action items and to agree on some starting points to move forward with change. The workshops bring together community groups, politicians, city staff, public health, recreation, and other community groups, and then we offer a follow-up session which usually occurs 6 to 12 months after the initial workshop to see how they're going and to make sure that they're moving forward. So far, we've been able to hire some really wonderful provincial experts in the field of walkability to come, and that's been very instrumental in moving things forward. The other piece we work on, too, is ensuring that there's evaluation to see that change has happened. It's an invaluable piece to the work we're doing, and it shows that there's that we are making some change that's very positive to the community. Next slide. So a quick follow-up is really critical to each of those sessions to check on the status. Sometimes we will support citizens in doing a deputation to council because, again, as before I mentioned before, as a regional staff, I can't be a deputation to municipal councils, but I can support our local citizens in making those deputations. The other piece that we work on is supporting them to do some advertising around the work that they're doing and generally providing ongoing support, and I'll be talking a little bit more about that shortly. So some of the supports that we have done and some of the data that we have used to inform planning is we've had influence over our 12 municipal official plans. And at the end of this slideshow, I'm going to provide you with a link so that you're able to use these resources later. So what we have is a draft document that we're just making some last amended changes to it based on some feedback we've had from municipalities, but around supporting active transportation in the official plan with some policy examples. And then municipalities are given these policy examples, and then they adapt some of these policy examples into their local official plans. We've had influence over transportation master plans, both at the regional level and at municipal levels. We've been involved in trails plans, cycling plans, pedestrian plans, community improvement plans. These are all great opportunities to have influence over active transportation. As a public health staff, I'm able to do some of the administrative support around getting that information into the documents and creating the documents. And then our local citizens really champion ensuring that these things are actually addressed in their local municipalities. We've done urban design guidelines. We've worked at very high-level strategic plans. Some of the other things that we work on, too, is those recognition pieces. So things like walkability checklists and being able to inform each municipality based on the results of those checklists what successes they're having and what areas of concern their citizens are having. And we provide that report to each of the mayors on a yearly basis so that they can see what's happening in the, around the walkability of their community. We also look at awards. We encourage the walkability awards as well as the bicycle-friendly community awards. And as a staff member, I help them to actually write up their applications. We support their active transportation committees, and we provide workshops for them. We've done a forum, a summit. We've done a bike-friendly business communities forum. So we do different things to support these citizen groups so that they're able to be successful in their communities. And then we also provide them with information when regional and municipal EAs are coming up and some of the pieces that link them to policy and some of the supports that go around them. So one of the other things we've done, too, is we've created an active transportation Niagara network. And what the Active Transportation Niagara Network does is it brings together representatives from each of the citizens groups around the region, along with municipal staff, regional staff, members from other interested groups like Climate Action Niagara is an environmental group here in Niagara that have an interest in the work we're doing but have a slightly different spin to the work. So we bring these groups together and we meet twice a year. It's a networking group and we provide the administrative support to the group, and when they need resources developed, we do the resource development for them. And it's been a very successful group to bring together. And on this slide here, I've put in the direct link to the resources that we have. Through our regional website, we're not able to put up PDF documents, but through our Healthy Living Niagara partnership, all of our resources are made available for citizens to use on that link. So you're free to welcome and adapt any of the resources that you see that are useful to you. So in summary, my greatest work here in Niagara Region is to really support the citizens' groups in providing them with the resources, the access to data analysis, report writing, to really engage them and support them in moving active transportation forward. Well, that's it.
Thank you very much, Jackie. So at this point, we're going to ask people to hit *4 to unmute your phones and invite questions for any one of the four speakers. So I'll begin with a question, and this is for Hamilton. I'm just wondering, Sharon and Kelly, have you guys tried to weave health equity issues into any of the work that you've done on the built environment?
Yes, actually we have. We were part of providing an appendix to a report that our colleagues in Public Works put forward in February of this year. And there was a large health equity piece around the specific to active transportation and ensuring that that message got out. So, yes, and I would say that we're starting to more and more bring the SDOH and health equity pieces forward. And certainly as part of our North End TMP piece that Kelly and I are currently working on, that has a huge health equity piece to it.
Thanks, Sharon. Other questions?
Hi, it's Kevin Gould in New Brunswick. I had a question for Sue. You mentioned on page 5 of your presentation that you influence infrastructure decisions, and I'd be interested in knowing exactly how you go about doing that.
Well, I guess the main example of that was through the paved shoulders. So about 5 years ago, there was a section of road, it was about 10 kilometers long, that was up for a big rehabilitation. And so they had to do an environmental assessment process for that. And so as part of that, we kind of coordinated a letter-writing campaign, and so we encouraged people to send letters to the consultant and advocating for paved shoulders for various reasons. And as a result, the consultant added to the road design, he added the 1.2-meter paved shoulder on either side. And so since that time, the county has made it part of their major road projects to add the paved shoulders. So that would be the biggest, the most obvious, I guess, impact that we had. I would say in a lesser way, in Halliburton, the work that we did to on the active transportation plan included identifying some problem spots in town for using active transportation and for pedestrians, and so we hired somebody to do some illustrations. We hired a landscape architect that were included in the active transportation plan. And subsequent to that, the municipality, when they decided that they were going to move forward with the streetscaping plan, they hired that same landscape architect to actually do the full, plans for the street. And also, so that was great because he had already seen the lay of the land. He'd been in communication with us and then was able to sort of move that project forward. So that was a little bit less direct, but I think we still played a bit of a role in that.
Any idea what the extra cost was to those upgrades to add that 1.2 meters on either side?
I don't. Although, if you're interested, I do have some figures from other rural areas in Ontario. Now, they'd be a little bit old, but there's, for example, there's a community just east of here that did some, you know, some calculations about what the cost was and what the cost benefit is, because although it's more expensive to add the paved shoulder, what they calculated was over the lifespan of the road, it's actually a cost savings because it extends the road. It extends the road wear and tear.
Yeah, to get cars off the road. It's
yeah, exactly.
There,
yeah.
Just to add to that, this is Jackie in Niagara. One of the things that we've done to change, to have influence over the infrastructure, we've done a complete streets policy document, and what we've been doing in that is we actually have done kind of a charade where we brought people together and looked at one particular community and how we could change that road. And we, too, are doing the illustrated streetscapes to give people an idea of what it looks like and how you can make those changes to make them more walkable. The other piece around, you were talking about the cost of additional pavement. The wider the width is on the road, the longer the actual roadway car surface lasts because it doesn't crumble at the edges. And what we've done, and you'll find it on the website, is we've developed some fact sheets around the economic value of active transportation, and we use that language to support active transportation change.
It'd be interesting to notice if there was any difference in car speeds, because the wider the roads, the faster the vehicles travel too. So, yeah. Anyway, no, it's good. I was just curious because it might be something that, well, it would be a question that would get asked if just trying to sell this idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did have one last question, if I may, for Sue.
Yep.
About the Communities in Action Committee. I'm just, I guess, how did, apologize if you did go over this, but how did that get established, and how does it operate?
It got established. There was in 2004. That was just before I started here. The person whose job I replaced, there was a representative from public health. There was somebody from economic development, somebody from health services, and someone from a local research group, and they sort of came together. Initially, because there was a focus on recreation, the whole idea was to increase levels of physical activity. And the shift changed from recreation to active transportation because they saw it as a way to encourage physical activity without, like, and make it more accessible to do that, right, by incorporating it into people's everyday routines. So that's kind of, that was kind of the genesis of it, and this the committee itself is administratively supported through an organization called the Haliburton County Community Co-op. So it's a cooperative organization that sort of serves as an umbrella to a number of community-based initiatives. So they have a board of directors, they have you know, they're incorporated and all that stuff. So because the CIA is a member group of that cooperative, they have we have insurance, and we can also apply for grants through that organization. So sometimes it's nice to have it's nice to work with a group that's a little bit arm's length from the public health unit and also from the municipality, because we did have conversations over a little while ago, you know, years back, about, you know, should we try to see if we can become a committee of council? And what we felt was it was easier to do the work that we wanted to do, being separate from not being a municipal council. So because it enables us to, you know, do more advocacy and that kind of thing. So we're fortunate in Haliburton County that we have this cooperative that sort of, it takes all these sort of stray groups and enables them to do their work under a bit of a structure.
And so it's part of your, a big part of your work plan to be to sit on this group?
Yeah. Exactly. And as I said, it's great for me because it helps me to meet my work plan objectives.
Yeah.
as well.
I'm asking these questions because I'm picturing ourselves moving forward, and this is what we're trying to figure out, is how do we, for the sustainability piece, is how do we work with our partners to ensure that we're in having that chance to influence the decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
And again, because our health unit is not part of the municipal government, I can go and make deputations to council, unlike Jackie, for example.
Are there other questions?
Yeah, it's John Carsley in Vancouver. First of all, just let me say how nice it is to hear of all this activity in less urbanized areas, where I think the challenges are really so much different than in big cities. I do have a question, I guess it's for all three of you, and that is, various work, have you had pushback or negative or opposition to these kinds of plans, or has it all been wine and roses? I ask this because I'm just going this afternoon to a council meeting here in Vancouver over an extremely fraught plan by the city to change a street into a neighborhood, an arterial into a neighborhood road with better pedestrian and bike path, bike access.
How about Sharon, do you want to go first?
Yeah, no, it's not all roses. We have, Kelly and I have our work set out for us. I think one of the biggest challenges is that culture. We really still have very much a car culture in our society, and it's how we go about changing that culture. So there's been, for any of you who know Hamilton, we have a number of one-ways that are running through our city, and there's absolutely pushback when there's any sort of conversation around perhaps considering changing those into two ways. So I think education, awareness, we still have a lot of work to do in terms of making the pitch, making the sell, in terms of changing that culture for many citizens and also some of our colleagues and others. So that is a challenge.
Sue or Jackie, do you want to add anything to that?
Certainly. We've definitely had our challenges here in Niagara. We have 12 very unique municipalities, rural and urban. And to be quite truthful, when I look at the municipalities that we have on board, our rural ones are probably our strongest. And I think part of that has to do with their sense of community. They're a smaller group of people and they know each other. And that has been a tremendous strength to the work that we've done. When we started our foray into active transportation, we actually started it with walking and the Walk On project, and that goes back almost 10 years ago. So we started with walking and being able to get families walking. More recently, we've taken a health equity perspective and making note that about 30% of our population don't drive. And when you start to present it in that perspective, they go, 30%? Seriously? And you say, well, really, from 0 to 18, most people don't have a driver's license. And with our graduated licensing system in Ontario, it takes most youth until they're 18 years old to be able to have a full G license. So from 0 to 18, all of our youth aren't able to drive. Then you have in your adult population, you have people who can't afford to have an automobile, or families that rely on one automobile, so other people within that family have to use active transportation to get to where they're going. The other piece in Niagara that I'm sure isn't all that unique across Canada is we have a huge senior population. And as they age, and we want them to be able to age in place, they start to lose their ability to drive and their licenses for various reasons, physical, cognitive. So when you think about it, 30% of our population don't drive, so we need to start thinking about how to get that group. Some of the focus that we've also noted is when you were talking about paved shoulders or cost to the infrastructure, often council focuses on, oh my gosh, it's going to cost X number of dollars to add those sidewalks or X number of dollars to add, you know, additional bike lanes or additional meterage onto the sides of the road. But then when you actually start to look at the cost of running an automobile on those roads, it's significantly greater, plus the other health implications of cost, health implication costs. And that's where we really start to look at the economic value of active transportation so that we could change that conversation, because that was one of the barriers that we definitely have come upon. So it's the other thing, too, is every community has a different focus. And so while our focus might be on health, because we're public health departments, the focus in a community might be on climate change. Maybe that's not the area that you're focusing on in your health department, or maybe that's not where you have staff to support active transportation. But that's what they want to talk about. So in our community of Grimsby, they created their own citizen group called Grimsby Green. At the end of the day, we both want the same things. We want more people walking and biking. Their reason for doing it is around the environment. Our reason is because we want people walking more and reduce obesity rates and diabetes and other chronic diseases. So each community has come at it from a different lens, and being able to support them with the lens and their interest has worked quite successfully. But sometimes you get something started, it doesn't take right away. Sometimes it starts, you know, there's a start and stall, and sometimes it evolves in a very different way than you originally planned, and that's okay.
Thanks, Jackie. Sue, did you want to add anything else? Or?
Well, sure, I agree with what both Jackie and Sharon said, and I would say that the most specific way that I've seen pushback, I think I read an article about that street in Vancouver that you're referring to. When we first started promoting Share the Road messages up here, there was a lot of pushback from people, from car drivers, who felt like it's like, oh, those cyclists want to take over the roads. And so there's a whole education piece that's ongoing about, no, it's not we want to take over the roads, we want to share the road. And, you know, I think that it's good to, my perspective was, well, at least people are talking about it. You know, they're paying enough attention, and it's important that they might not agree with the message for whatever reason, but at least it's building some awareness. And so part of what our job then becomes is trying to reframe the message for them so that they have, you know, a different perspective about roads being resources not just for cars, especially in a rural area, and how to use that resource collectively and safely. And and I do think that it's incremental, as Jackie said. It's small steps forward and back, and it's also something that there's always going to be some people that aren't happy with it.
And just
you know what, Jackie, I'm going to stop there just because we're time starting to run out. So I just want to give people an opportunity for another question, if that's okay. Are there any other questions for our speakers? I'd like to just ask one really quick one for Sue. Sue, you talked about funding that you have received in HKPR to do some of the work you've done, and I wonder if you could just give us an example, just two or three organizations that you've kind of got funding from, just so people maybe can kind of see if those sources might exist in their own communities.
Sure. We've gotten provincial money from the Ministry of Health through the Healthy Communities Fund. We've gotten money from the Heart and Stroke Advocacy Fund, which is geared towards children. We have gotten funding from our local Community Futures Development Corporation. So that's federal money from Industry Canada that gets funneled to CFDCs to be distributed in the community.
Thank you. So any other questions for people?
I have one from Regina. It's around partnerships, and it's a little bit of a different question for each group, but I'm just wondering with the, in Hamilton, what is the health's role around the partnership? Who's actually kind of doing the work, like on those interdisciplinary teams? For Halliburton, when you're working with the community groups, building the capacity for them to advocate, what's the role of health? Are you sitting around those community boards, or how are you involved? And then for Niagara, when you're looking at jumping onto the public event, what is your involvement? Are you helping to plan, or are you just kind of attending the event? Are you helping to pay for any of them?
So Hamilton, why don't you go first?
So I think in Hamilton, it depends on the situation. Sometimes public health is taking a leadership role in the partnership. Sometimes we're invited to the table by, event that might be coming up, and we're just establishing a contact, and the partnership flourishes from there. Sometimes it's coming from the community. It's almost like wherever we can make inroads, and however we can, we're looking for those opportunities. So we're happy to take the lead, but we're also happy just to play that supporting role in a partnership and bring to the table whatever it is that we can.
And so can I just follow up on something that was said there? So do you guys, as a rule, though, give money to community groups at all in Hamilton? Or that tend to be more in-kind kind of contributions?
Most is probably in kind. There is some funds that go out. Sharon's involved in Open Streets, so there is some funding that goes towards that. Sometimes when it's even just the hosting of a workshop or something like that, that then maybe we're bringing in the speakers or finding the place to host those types of things where we're bringing money to the table.
Excellent. And then how about Halliburton, Sue?
I think I mentioned that whenever we apply for grants, we always build in some project coordination funds. And so we have had a person who's a planner who we have contracted and worked with ever since the coalition got underway. And so she and I really do most of the legwork of the CIA. So she does it as the paid coordinator, and I do it wearing my public health hat, and that seems to work quite well. And then the rest of the coalition members are there in kind of advisory and support capacity.
And if I can just, again, follow up for you, Sue, though, when it comes to advocacy, though, you try to get the partners to do that part themselves. You might support them with resources, but you don't necessarily do that with them.
No, I do that with them.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, because we're separate from the municipality, I have a little bit more leeway to do that.
So you might do a deputation with them? Okay.
Yep.
But will they also do deputations on their own as well?
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay. Okay. And then Niagara, Jackie?
With regard to the public events, there's actually a few different ways that we do things. From a public health perspective, I come with no dollars. I have no budget to support anything financially. However, my contributions are very much in kind. The way that we move forward with public events is through a Healthy Living Niagara partnership. And Healthy Living Niagara applies every year for Healthy Communities funding. And then with the funding that they have, we go sometimes to RFP processes, or sometimes we're able to just move forward on various projects depending on the cost. So based on the needs of our active transportation groups in our community, we sometimes pull together events, or sometimes our community groups, like Pelham, for example, they run their own events and we'll go in sometimes as a support, more of an in-kind. Another piece that we've done successfully here when it comes to looking at events and ways of coordinating, we don't have a bike coordinator in the Niagara region. So I have supported, I wrote the grant application for a bike coordinator position through our tourism agency through the job creation partnership funding through the province of Ontario. So I actually wrote the job description and I applied for the grant, or I wrote the grant, and they've applied for the funding to bring on this staff member. And then I will be involved in orienting that staff member and providing support. But that staff member belongs to Venture Niagara, not to the Niagara region.
So, Jackie, can I, again, I'm just trying to clarify points for people because I think this is a point that's quite interesting for them. So in terms of when you talked about the community funding for Niagara, Healthy Living Niagara, can you just explain what you mean by that? Again, remembering other people aren't from Ontario.
Healthy Living Niagara is a partnership of about 40 agencies, and Niagara Region Public Health is a member of this partnership. And the coordinator of Healthy Living Niagara applies for grant dollars through our Healthy Communities Fund, which is a provincial fund through the Ministry of Health. Those dollars are used to mobilize some of the active transportation events that we do.
And how much might you get in a year from Ministry of Health for that kind of work?
It really depends on what funds are available. This year we've applied for about $100,000.
Great. Thank you very much. Again, just because we're starting to run out of time, I want to kind of keep us moving if that's okay. Are there other questions for the speakers?
Hi, it's Inga from Ottawa Public Health. Just a brief question for any of you, really. Do you find that your support of community groups who are advocating for active transportation ever puts you in a compromised position with the municipalities that you're working with in terms of those community groups perhaps advocating for infrastructure enhancements that are, you know, really beyond the limits of what the municipality is prepared to implement?
And Inga, are you asking anybody in particular?
Anyone in particular who's, you know, because I think they're all working with different community groups. So I'm just kind of curious to see whether or not it creates any tensions with the health unit's relationship with the municipalities in terms of their support of advocacy groups.
Anybody?
From a Niagara perspective, I make it very clear with the people that I work with that I can't do advocacy work. My job is really to support them with information. So if I know, for example, there's an EA coming up in one of the municipalities, what I may do is provide them with background support and information about important features that need to be considered in that EA, and then provide those citizens with the information they need for the public information centers and some of the letter writing. But at the end of the day, it's up to the municipality to decide whether or not they have the funds to make that infrastructure change happen. Even if somebody wants it, it doesn't mean they're necessarily going to get it. But sometimes there's some reasonable compromise that can be had. It's small steps, very, very much small steps. And I just wanted to add one more piece to an earlier conversation we had about cyclists or pedestrians. There is no us or them. We really need to change that dialogue. It's not cyclists or motorists. Most people are cyclists and motorists and pedestrians and bus drive, you know, public transit users at different times in their day or in their life. So the conversation really needs to change around how are we making it accessible for everybody in the community. And I find that really kind of changes that conversation. Then it's not, oh, those bicycle enthusiasts, they always want to have bike lanes. Well, no, we're just saying that it's important that everyone be included and have choice in their mode of transportation. And I find that seems to make way where there's tension.
Thank you, Jackie. Any other questions for people?
Hi there. It's Una Tyson from Fraser Health in British Columbia. Actually, two questions, if I may. The first one is for Sue. I'm interested in the comments that you had around evaluation. And can you speak a bit more on how you may have gone about developing the evaluation strategy and any benchmarks you may have used or any resources that assisted you?
Yeah. So we decided we wanted both qualitative and quantitative data, which is why we had a survey. So the survey gave us some quantitative information as well as qualitative. The other thing was that we had done a little bit of benchmarking in 2005 and 2007 using a survey and using observation counts. And so we thought those were two things we wanted to recreate. We had to tweak them a fair bit because when they were done previously, there were some limitations to the methodologies. But because we had some data that we could use, we thought, well, we want to do those pieces definitely again so that we can try to do some comparisons. And then because the whole relationships with municipalities piece is such a significant part of what we do, that's why we did the key informant interviews. And I'd be happy to, we also consulted with our health unit epidemiologist at the front and at the sort of at the beginning and on our way through as we did the evaluation, and she was really helpful in directing us in order to make the whole strategy as, I guess, as robust as it could be. So where we're at with it right now is everything's been done. The final report is just about finished, and so then we'll use that as a tool to, you know, then take back and present to our municipalities. But I'd be happy to share, you know, like an outline of our strategy, if that would be helpful.
Sue, if you send that to me, this is Kim, I can
sure.
certainly distribute that to people. That would
yeah.
be perfect.
Great. And my second question, if that's all right, is for all three. I'm just curious if, in addition to active transportation, are there any other initiatives around the built environment that you've seen successfully implemented in rural or suburban communities? I'm thinking, you know, around, you know, land use planning as it relates to growth and density and ensuring connected communities and access to amenities, transit, et cetera, because, you know, rural and suburban communities clearly may have some challenges in those areas. So if there's any examples or any strategies that have been used around that, I'd be interested to hear.
And Una, I'm sorry, are you asking specifically around the rural or in general?
Rural or suburban, just any examples where, you know, there's been some successful initiatives in those communities?
Maybe one from each of you. If you guys have one good example you could just speak to briefly. Maybe Hamilton first, Sharon and Kelly.
So the land use and the parks and open space is a pretty new venture for us around the built environment. I think that our colleague that works on the parks piece has been making some headway around the park acquisition and has been lobbying for, you know, the increased green space in some of the neighborhoods, and I believe that they have been successful in acquiring either some vacant land or some schools that were surplus that are now going to be changed into parks. As for the land use piece, I think that right now the big piece for her is the supplying information into secondary plans, really, and making sure that the health perspective is brought to those plans.
And then how about Halliburton?
I would say that most of our efforts have been active transportation focused. I mean, we do some work with trails groups. So there's that, you know, there's a recreational aspect to that, but they're also they also tend to be active transportation routes, and so we're able to kind of link it in that way. So that's, yeah, that's been our primary focus for sure.
And what about you, Jackie?
One of our great successes has been through the school travel planning pilot projects that we did. We had three schools, each in different municipalities, that participated in the school travel planning pilot, and what they were able to do is influence change within each of their municipalities to make it easier and safer for children to walk to school.
And did they end up with plans that are now applied to other schools, or is it kind of site specific?
It's site specific.
Okay, and Una, is that kind of what you had in mind?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, and I have to say, what I'd like to do now is we've got 20 minutes left, and there were a few other issues that our members wanted to discuss. So I think what I'm going to do is cut it off unless somebody's got some burning last question they'd like to ask. Okay, so I think what I'm going to do is just thank the four of you. The work that the four of you have been doing in your three health authorities is incredible. I think it's really helpful for all of our members in class, but I think particularly for some of our new project teams. So thank you very much for joining us today, and I'll let you guys kind of sign off at this stage, and then we'll have a little bit of an open discussion for the rest of our class members who'd like to stay on. So thank you to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if anybody you know, has other questions, I think we'd all be happy to field them through email and whatnot, so feel free to
send us a message.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
And if I'm just going to say to my class members right now, I'm just going to hit star one to take the recording off so the open discussion is kind of more private, okay? So if you'll just hang on a second.